if you're going to have a compliance framework, or especially if you're going to have multiple compliance framework, you can have a web app now where you're storing your controls in a database, and then you can map those out to control owners, to like regular validations, and then to like audit evidences, right? So that when we're doing all these things, you just save it all in one place, and then you can share it out to who needs to have access to it, right? It's just like a simple principle that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
But maybe like one of the like exciting or developing markets or technologies in that industry, I think, is the trust centers, and companies are starting to like publish their security controls so that you don't even need an auditor, right? If you're this user entity that would normally like ask for a SOC report to get some assurance, you can just go in directly into this portal and see what's going on at that company. I think it's an area that's not really implemented yet successfully anywhere that I've seen, but eventually I think it could make a lot of sense.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Paramify podcast. I'm your host, Kenny Scott. And once again, we're going to talk about InfoSec. On today's show, we have Bo Biteau, GRC knowledge guru, all-around great guy. We were just catching up. He's the co-founder at Render Compliance. It's always great to have another co-founder on the show. Bo, thanks for being on the show with us today.
Yep, totally. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah. Just for the audience's sake, if you're not already giving Bo Biteau a follow on LinkedIn, he's putting out great content all the time, right? So if you need a master of memes and actually good ones, right, that aren't just overplayed, you should give Bo a follow. And he also puts out actually really tons of helpful content for his clients and me. And that's actually where I got to know him. And so I was already reading Bo's content when actually he reached out to me, and I'm like, oh, sweet. Yeah, of course. Let's get on the show. So I'm super stoked to have you on, man.
Yeah. Thanks for the intro. Thanks for having me on. Yeah. I didn't anticipate how much of my career at this stage would be devoted to making memes, but it's a percentage. I won't say what percentage, but it's a percentage.
Yeah, for a while, that's all I was doing. I was spending my most time. I mean, I remember I spent a lot of time on this Indiana Jones meme, and I thought it was so good. And I don't think we see it anymore, but I need to think it was so funny. But, you know.
Yeah, well, that's been my experience, too. Like, the ones that I thought were just genius, you know, and just going to explode and go viral were complete duds. And then, like, my co-founder will suggests one to me, and I'm like, well, you know, it's fine, but it's not great. And then I'll post it, and it'll be huge. You know, it'll be my biggest win. It's just like, okay, I don't understand the world, but apparently you do. So maybe you should be meme person.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like weird when you think about, you know, what's gonna work. We really don't know. I was reading this book. What was the book? It was, I think it's called Alchemy. That's what it's called. Okay. And it's a marketing book. And it talks about, it's so funny when it talks about how poorly Red Bull tested, you know, in the testing. They're like, oh my gosh, this is like abjectly, this is the worst thing I've ever had. And it just tested so poorly.
Yeah,
and everybody's like, no, man, we're going to do it. We're going to run with it because, you know, we're just going to run with it. And, you know, right away they had like a $6 billion business. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
You just don't know what's going to work.
Totally.
Alchemy. It's an interesting book.
Yeah. I guess you got to put stuff out there, try it, see how it does.
All right. And so, Bo, you got to take us back to the beginning. How did you start your career? How did you get into this stuff?
Yeah, well, it's fairly simple, I guess. I started out in finance and accounting. That's what I studied over at the University of Washington in Seattle.
Hey.
And then started out with an accounting firm. I did like a year of maybe a year and a half of financial auditing. And then the firm that I was at was launching their own, they call it an IT risk practice. And so basically like data security audits, right? And assessments. Yeah. Of course, they were seeing all the money that people were making in that area. And we were like, we're an accounting firm. We should jump on board here.
We have opinions. We can get opinions.
Yeah, exactly. So they launched that team. They were looking for their first staff to join. I raised my hand, joined there, and I loved it. It just made the world of InfoSec made a lot more sense to me than finance or accounting standards, at least. It was like, okay, there's a reason why, you know, these frameworks exist, and it's to keep this stuff safe. And I've kind of kept that principle throughout my career. If I get confused about something, you know, I just go back to, well, how does it help keep this thing safe? What are you trying to keep safe, and how do you keep it safe? And you just keep asking those questions until you understand. So anyways, it clicked. It made a lot more sense to me. So I kept doing that, and eventually started to focus on something called SOC 2 exams or SOC 2 reports. If you're in the SaaS world, you're probably all too familiar with those. Essentially a data security assessment, right? Worked for a couple different CPA firms working on those reports. And then just last year broke out with my co-founder of Render Compliance to start that company. And yeah, here we are, 2024, Render Compliance.
That's awesome. You got your CPA. That's awesome. So it's interesting because you have a lot of people who are trying to break into the world of InfoSec. And I'm kind of similar to you. I went through public accounting. I had a lot of technology background and, you know, some technical expertise, right? But I did go through public accounting. And to me, I felt it was great because you're immediately talking to people who are making big decisions at the company, you know, totally. When you're doing the audits, right? What you find ends up showing up at, you know, in executive meetings. You know, so when you find things, it's things that are important, you know, and so right away,
it's a lot of power all at once.
And you get kind of shielded, right, from your seniors and your managers and things like that. So yeah, tell me a little bit about the benefits that you feel. So there's that. And I have another question after that. We'll go back to SOC 2, but tell me a little bit about the benefits of working in consulting and how much of an advantage that's been for you. When you get into InfoSec,
yeah,
that's
a great question. I totally agree. Like right from the get go, you know, if it's a financial audit, you're a brand new staff and you're interfacing with the CFO of the company or whatever, you know, accounting manager, and you're like, you're getting some pretty cool experience pretty quickly after that. Maybe you start giving presentations to their board of directors or something like that. Just having that exposure to high level staff of the companies you're working with is pretty cool. Like you get a cool perspective there. The piece that I really have enjoyed about it and what keeps bringing me back to consulting, despite the cons, right, is especially doing SOC 2. So maybe that'll be a segue, but you get to interface with people from so many different, parts of the company, right? Like you get to meet with HR and you get to meet a lot with IT, you get to meet with engineering, finance, probably legal some. And so you just, if you're interested at all in business, then consulting is such a great way to to learn because you get exposed to so many different parts of it so quickly. So
yeah, I completely agree. And I think a lot of those skills that you learn first and foremost, like the softer side of cyber, is just still grossly undervalued, you know, by cyber professionals.
I think
it just might always be because the more technical you get, the more you know something, the more you start to see, to the man with the hammer, everything's a nail, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
When you are technical, you start to see things in patterns, and that's the way you see it. You see it. And when other people don't see it the way you do, you think, oh, it's because you're dumb, right? Or it's because, you know, and you learn really quick, you know, off the bat that your perspective is just one. You know, that was my experience being an auditor. I'm like, oh, you see it differently. And I'm like, I thought this was a big deal. And I'm like, no, it's not. Or I think this is a big deal. And now you need to convince someone else. And so, I don't know, technical folks tend to see things like that. And so I really value... when we make hires, we really value people that have come from that experience. Our head of client success came from PwC, and he's been there for like over 15 years, right? And I just think that it's so important, you know?
Yeah, totally. Well, that was one of the things that initially drew me to you, because I found you on, did I find you or you found me? I don't know. I probably found you on LinkedIn, and then, and I was just like, because I think in the compliance world, security world specifically, we like for some reason to keep it really stuffy and formal and official. And you kind of just break through that with your personality, right? Which is awesome. Like you just, like you're just making videos talking about stuff in an everyday voice. And I think that cuts through and brings people together in a big way. So the soft skills are huge. I was gonna say, have you found like that you're, because you describe yourself as an extrovert, right? Like, have you found
totally
that to be an asset for you in this industry?
Yeah, I get a lot of energy from just building relationships, like real relationships, and so it's kind of cool because it just creates its own momentum. So that's not for everybody. Certainly, I can give people's energy if you're
here for right.
No, yeah, for sure. But I absolutely get a ton of I get a high right off of like just building relationships and working out problems with people. So it's tough, right? Because it's perfect for like a founder, right? Because like people go, Kenny, you need to take a break, and I'm like, okay. It's kind of my hobby, like work, right? It really is.
Yeah.
It's weird. It wasn't always like that. I think it helps when you're doing something you really care about. So
yeah,
if I don't care about it, then yeah, I don't want to do it. But anyway, ADHD, extrovert for sure. Man. Okay. So let's go. Unless you got something else. You got something else where you can say?
Yeah, I was just going to confess that I am definitely an introvert, but I prepared for this meeting with my cup of coffee, fresh cup of coffee. So
good.
I'll feel like I'm extrovert for at least an hour.
That's awesome, man. I love it. Yeah. So, yeah, it is important to kind of know your personality type, right? When you're kind of making up your team and everything. So I don't know. Would you say your co-founder, you guys are similar,
very
different?
Yeah, very different in a lot of areas, which I think that complement. What's the word?
Complement
each other pretty well. Yeah,
100%.
I'm very much a big idea guy, but sometimes lack the execution organization to make things happen right. And so my co-founder Angelica is like very much a details person, follow through, building organized systems, good at project management. So yeah, that was kind of the initial vision to put those two pieces together, and I think it's worked out really well so far.
Incredible. Yeah, that's good, man. Get that team right. That's so cool. All right, man. So
you have a co-founder as well, right?
I do, yeah. Tyler Stevens, yeah. He came up,
That breaks in on for you guys.
Yeah, definitely complimentary. Definitely complimentary. I owe him a lot, right? He came from a strict technical background, but he had worked at an incubator that we actually partnered with, RevRoad. They're just great people. I love RevRoad. But he worked there, and he also worked at startups before, and he just like loves coding, right? But he helped companies kind of go zero to one, like 17 times, right? Before. Wow. And so I had gone, I mean, I've talked about like the arduous journey in other podcasts, you know, where it's like, it's really hard. I think at the very beginning of the Pronify podcast, we talked a little bit about it, how it started, but he came, I met Tyler. He's definitely younger than me, but just, you know, kind of wise beyond his years in terms of being able to execute things. And so he had a great skill set, you know, for us, awesome. Right? But
yeah, sweet.
So kind of helped us execute in a lot of ways. And he's very organized, very much introvert, right? And so when you're working close and you're as intense as I am, you know, you got to kind of, you know, that could be hard, right? He'll be the first to tell you, it's kind of tough to, I know a lot more about, you know, introverts working with extroverts now. And the stuff I didn't really know before, I had everything on the line. You know, and, you know, I'm fighting tooth and nail for my family and everything else, you know? So anyways, but, it's good. And I didn't have any expertise really in building enterprise software and software. And so since then we've got, you know, we've got tons of experience, you know, so our CTO now, he has over 30 years experience, right, doing things. And, you know, so having that kind of knowledge, right, for building enterprise software is, you know, is paramount. And we have a lot of other devs now. So Tyler, it helps me with product quite a bit, and he's still coding a lot, right? And so you kind of do everything in a startup.
Yeah.
He's just been awesome, Tyler, for sure, right?
Yeah, that's huge. That's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. Okay. So we talked about SOC 2. I don't know. We talk a little bit about those things. We had someone from Moss Adams on the podcast a while ago. But for people who don't know, tell us a little bit about what a SOC 2 report is. What is that?
Yep. Great question. A SOC 2 report is basically, it's one of the most popular security reports in the United States. Especially for technology companies. And so, yeah, the basic use case is if you're a company and you're processing a lot of sensitive data from another company, so you have it on your platform or it comes through your platform somehow, and you're trying to, you're out there as a company, you're trying to win customers, right? Then those companies need some way to know if they can trust you, right? They're like, okay, I have this huge data set of all my customers. Do I want to sign up with this company? Do I want to give it to them? So one of the ways that they can get assurance is to do their own audit of this company. And so basically, you know, the industry eventually got so congested with some of those audit requests that they started, that there was a need for a third party to come in and do this independent audit. And so now if you're that technology company, you can get this audit. You know, SOC 2 is just one of many that you could get, as you well know, but it's a popular one and kind of a baseline one for security that's well accepted across many different industries and many different companies.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you saw an opportunity, you were doing this for companies. And then obviously you and your partner decided to start Render Compliance. And you're focused specifically on this. How does your company approach SOC 2 assessments differently from others in the market?
Yeah. Great question. Yeah, we did see a lot of opportunity, I think, because you kind of have, like at this point in the industry, you kind of have, like, the way I see it, two different types of audits that are happening. You have kind of the well-established, bigger accounting firms that are providing these audits, and they have really, really good, really well-developed policies and procedures that they follow. So you come out with a good quality audit from a good reputation firm, right? And then you have kind of on the new cutting edge side of things, a lot of small audit firms who have kind of rode the wave with the compliance automation companies, especially like, yeah, companies like Vanta and Drata, that have kind of made SOC 2 explode for tech startups. But unfortunately, maybe an unintended result of that wave is it's kind of devalued the quality of a lot of those audit reports. And so you end up with CPA firms that do an audit super fast, but it's maybe not great quality. It doesn't lend itself. It doesn't actually help you long-term build out your compliance program. And maybe it's not well received by third parties because it's not super quality. Mm. And so we were seeing like there's kind of these two different sides of the market. So it seemed to us there's a lot of opportunity for a firm that can be small, be quick, be nimble, can work with some of these emerging technologies and platforms, but still at the end of the day, you get great client service, kind of will walk with you every step of the way, and you'll come out with a really quality report that, you know, let's say the controls in that report actually reflect the things that you're doing, not just this cookie cutter template, right, that somebody rubber stamped. So we're trying to come in between kind of those two markets and provide that level of service.
So kind of like leveraging the tools that are at your disposal, mm-hmm. just to kind of like make your audit process better, and helping them maybe use the tools correctly, right? In some cases, I'm assuming.
Yeah, totally. Like, I think the tools are awesome. Like, I think the technology saves a lot of time because it basically, you know, it cuts out a lot of the middleman. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, sometimes those tools aren't implemented properly, and so having a auditor who can help you know, you know, what a control framework should look like is a pretty important piece when you're choosing
your
audit partner.
Yeah, and in your perspective, I always like to get this insight. Why are most companies, what is making them want to do SOC 2? How are they leveraging, you know, SOC 2 compliance for generating revenue? Is that where they're doing it, or are they doing it just, oh, we need to do this because this is a goal for FY24 or something like that?
Yeah. It's probably both. Like a lot of them are in conversations with a big new client prospect, right? And the prospect has, maybe they just ask, like, do you have a SOC 2 that we can see, or kind of pressure, or sometimes they require it, right? And say, like, if we're going to work with you, you need to have a SOC 2 by XYZ date. So that's one
one type. And then a lot of companies, it is a more proactive thing, like just knowing like, okay, if we have this, it's going to make us much more attractive prospect for our customers, our current customers and our future customers. There's so much research out there about trust, right? Like if a customer prospect trusts you, then you're going to have to work 10, I don't know what it is, 10 times less hard to secure them as a customer. And so a big piece of that is the security piece, right? And so the SOC 2 is a really good way to secure that trust.
Yeah, that's awesome. I probably should have asked this from the last question because it was a perfect segue, but we're learning. I'm learning. Yeah. So you talked about the tools. So what are some of the automation tools that are you find particularly exciting or transformative right now? You could maybe name some, or you could just kind of just generally say the ones that you're most excited about.
Yeah. Well, there's one called Paramify. Good question. There are several out there that specialize in SOC 2. There's probably less than 10 really popular ones in the United States, at least. I don't know if I have a particular one that I think is really cool, but I think just the technology in general is really exciting that companies are like, now it's kind of standard practice, right? That if you're going to have a compliance framework, or especially if you're going to have multiple compliance framework, you can have a web app now where you're storing your controls in a database, and then you can map those out to control owners, to like regular validations, and then to like audit evidences, right? So that when we're doing all these things, you just save it all in one place, and then you can share it out to who needs to have access to it, right? It's just like a simple principle that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
But maybe like one of the like exciting or developing markets or technologies in that industry, I think, is the trust centers, and some companies are starting to like publish their security controls so that you don't even need an auditor, right? That if you're this user entity that would normally like ask for a SOC report to get some assurance, you can just go in directly into this portal and see what's going on at that company. I think it's an area that's not really implemented yet successfully anywhere that I've seen, but eventually I think it could make a lot of sense.
Right. Yep. I agree, man. I've seen Trust.dot, I think how many companies want, that trust.company.com, trust center. And it is a really good idea. I've seen it for a while, and I know some of the people that are working on those. There's some good tools out there. Okay, man. Well, you know what? I should have asked it this way, because you have this awesome article. One of the ones where I was like, oh my gosh, I love this, right? It's like super simple. And that's just kind of Bo's way, for those of you who don't know, and you got to look at some of his articles. But one of them, you kind of paint a vivid picture of the compliance management software landscape, specifically for SOC 2. And so you range from the minimalist, like solo spreadsheet DJ, to like the full orchestra concierge services for SOC 2 specifically. So you have, what I'm talking about is like the low tech system, DIY SOC 2, the project management system, and the SOC 2 concierge, right? So Talk a little bit about those, and I have some follow-on questions for that after that. But yeah, so talk us through that.
I think that's one of the bigger questions people are asking around compliance is, and if you're just implementing a compliance framework like SOC 2 or, you know, heaven forbid FedRAMP or StateRAMP or Purple, then, you know, a lot of times people are like, okay, what system should I use to organize that? And a lot of times you start looking up softwares, right? But maybe that's not the right place to start. Like maybe you should start by just thinking about like what are my basic needs here? Mm-hmm. Going back to that previous example, like I just need a way to, I need a centralized place for controls where all the control owners can see which controls are applicable to them. And then I need a centralized place for evidence. And they can all go to this SharePoint folder and upload evidence. So maybe that's one of the more basic levels, right? If you're like a smaller org and it's a pretty simple system or framework, maybe you start with, because that's like easy to implement, right? You already have shared spreadsheets. You already have shared folders just on your 365 setup or whatever it is, Google. So maybe if you're small, you don't want to spend a ton of money or spend a lot of time to implement a fancy system, you start with that. I think I did say there was a level behind that of just like email and a static spreadsheet.
Yeah, you did. And the low-tech system.
Yeah.
Like spreadsheets and emails and task assignments, right? It's not really, right. It's inefficient, right? But it's like you can start there, right? Just start doing it.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, if you need to start there, yeah.
But Google Drive or like Confluence or, you know, SharePoint, those aren't that expensive, right? It's like you get so much value and you get the whole suite of tools. So it's like, that's where like we built our first prototypes. We're using, you know, basically the DIY, right? And then you can go from there, and then you get higher end, you know, integrations. But
then we get
go ahead.
I'd be curious too, because I think I wrote that article with dollar signs. Like I was trying to imitate the Yelp ratings, you know,
dollar signs.
Like, yeah, high. But I don't know how accurate that is necessarily, like, because then the next levels are like, well, you could use a project management system like Asana, and you could kind of shoehorn it or make it work for your compliance framework needs. So I honestly don't know like what pricing looks like for that compared to the final level there. Maybe you have more thoughts about that.
Definitely cheaper, right? Yeah. Yeah, once you start getting in tools, right, they can start really basic, but as soon as you know, a lot of times they'll want to package the deal, like they'll partner with auditors and things like that, right? So, and that's because people a lot of times, they just want the outcome. They just want the appearance of compliance, right, which I'm sure you deal with, right? You know, it's just like, the only reason I'm doing this is because my boss told me to do it, or like the only reason we're doing this is because we want to close this deal with Disney or something like that, you know? So it's like, So sometimes you do have those awesome tools that can automate, you know, all the evidence collection, which is like so much better than, you know, what we had, you know, a few years ago. But, but even when you have like the financial means, do you see a place where like, you know, they're not, when does the tools first approach start to break down, regardless of if you have the means financially to do it?
Like, maybe I don't understand the question.
So let's say you're like, oh, great. It's not necessarily one is better than the other. You were looking at those dollar signs with Yelp or whatever. But let's say you have all the money and you're like, okay, great, buy all the tools and implement them. You know, does that, I don't know. Maybe I'm just kind of leading it along, but does that ever break down where it's like, oh yeah, we have the money, let's buy it, and now we're better off? Or is that necessarily the case?
Oh, yeah, gotcha. I think that definitely breaks down pretty quickly, right? If your plan is only to throw money at it, like you could buy the best system in the world, but you still have to customize it, right? And you still have to keep it current and, you know, I don't know, configure it correctly, monitor it. There's
no easy button, right? You know, it's got to continually, and those things need to be, you know, updated, right? And configurations change and integrations change and everything. And the components you use, those change all the time, right? So,
yeah, totally. Yeah. And probably the way we've seen that most concretely is just like, I wonder if it's, I'm honestly not too familiar with FedRAMP. So, like, I don't know if the analogy breaks down when you use it in Paramify, but like with SOC 2 and a lot of the automation tools, they'll just take, the biggest problem is just taking the template, not changing anything, finding an auditor to rubber stamp it, and then, you know, you come out with this report that doesn't, it's not accurate. I don't know if there's an equivalent problem in the FedRAMP world, but.
Well, it ultimately comes down to, I think just, you know, in the FedRAMP world, there is still so few companies, right? And the scrutiny is still really high when it gets anything moderate or above, and especially high, right? So the scrutiny is very high. And you don't see a lot of breaches, you know, with FedRAMP systems. Like, so for example, Okta, you know, had that breach not too long ago, but that did not affect their FedRAMP environments. Because of the, you know, the rigor that goes into that. So I think the inefficiencies, they're kind of different, right? And the motivations, it doesn't even matter if you can't, it's really hard in FedRAMP just to have a rubber stamp mentality, because eventually it just would be hard to push it through. They're going to check, like, they're going to see for themselves if FIPS mode is enabled and if you have STIGs and CIS level 2 benchmarks. And you know, there's a lot that needs to be implemented, right? So I think what does happen, though, is planning is almost always, you know, just an afterthought, which is so crazy. For any assurance engagement, you have three phases. It's planning, you know, assessment, and then finally reporting, or however you want to name those two. And I think most of the tooling in our day is focused on that second leg, which is like, you know, let's automate. Let's see if AWS Inspector is turned on, right? Let's see if multi-factor authentication is turned on. Let's see who's done their training awareness, right? And let's put that in a dashboard. And so there's a lot of focus on that versus, do we really need all these things? You know, what do we really need and what are we missing? Are we just trusting something that's already kind of already in the assessment phase? And so I think that's the danger for people. It doesn't matter if it's FedRAMP or SOC 2. It's, hey, let's just think about it. What's the data that we have? And what are the assets that we have to protect it? Who are the people that we have? Things like that. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Makes sense.
What are some of the processes and strategies that you recommend to your clients for, you know, conducting a more efficient audit, you know, beyond just having tools and everything set up?
I think the biggest low hanging fruit is getting buy-in. Cause if your team, like, assuming as in most places, when the audit rolls around, you're going to have to reach out to multiple people for different things, right? It's not just one person who can provide all the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Getting buy-in from the team is a make it or break it thing. And to do that, like, I think the easiest thing you can do is just have that visibility of here's the very clearly communicating, like, here's the scope. That's probably the first thing, right? Communicating, here's the scope of the audit. So if they ask you, if the auditor asks you about this stuff, just tell them, you know, that's out of scope. But so here's the scope. And then here's, like we talked about, that the list of controls. Here's where you find the controls. And here's where you filter down the controls that are applicable to you. Just keeping in mind, these people have day jobs. How can we make this as easy on them as possible? So having that transparency of controls, showing them, you know, having them be accountable to the controls, making sure they know, okay, it's your responsibility, control owner, to go in there and let me know if this control has changed, so that when the auditor comes, they're not going to be surprised, or there's not going to be a gap or something like that. And so, yeah, you could do that. Like, I don't know, it depends on what you need, right? But a really easy way is like quarterly control validations. You just send out an email once a quarter and have everyone go on and validate. Yeah, yep, this control is still functioning the way it's written. And we won't have any issues evidencing that.
Nice. Okay. All right. And so we kind of talked a little bit about trust centers a little bit. Beyond like trust centers, you're excited for those. Based on your insights, where do you see the future of security compliance heading, especially in relation to emerging technologies like AI? You know, where do you see it right now, and what are your clients worried about? What are they talking about?
Yeah, good questions. Yeah, I think trust centers are a huge part of that future. Like all the things we've been talking about have kind of been internally, a company bringing things, making them more transparent, avoiding duplication, right? If you're already sharing evidence, then you might as well share it with the internal auditor and with the external auditor. And then trust centers are just a way to, like, you know, take that to the next level of, if we're already like going to be sharing this audit report with somebody and we're going to get 20 more requests for it, why don't we just put it on this portal and then you can come and self-service, find it there, right?
Nice.
And then,
and what kind of key things would I be looking for if you're like a customer and they're saying, hey, send us like what kind of key things, just so that people know kind of what they should look for in Trust Center?
Yeah. And I will probably misspeak here, but for things I've, go ahead.
Yeah. So if you're like, do you have multi-factor authentication enabled for your admins getting in, you know, something like that? What would you do if you were going to a
trust center? So from the limited research I've done, because I've never built my own trust center, never been on the internal side there, but from what I've seen, like, yeah, you could put things like your SOC 2 report up there, or if you're ISO certified, you could put your ISO cert up there. And then of course you have to have it gated so that only the right external users can view it after they maybe sign an NDA or something, right?
Yeah.
Or you grant access. But what else? Like,
that's great.
Yeah, if you're more in depth, you might publish your actual control framework up there, right? And say these are the actual things that we're doing. And then if you're really fancy, maybe you link that back somehow to your internal control framework, right?
Right. Totally, man. Yeah. Okay. That makes a ton of sense. All right. Yeah. What's up? Go. Yeah.
I was Yeah, can I ask you a question? Because I know this is your show. One of the things I was trying to wrap my head around was OSCAL. I don't know if you've already done this on this show. If so, feel free to skip on by. But like, I'd love like explain OSCAL to me. Like I'm six, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe 6 or 7 years old.
I don't know. I don't do it.
Okay.
Yeah. No. I could do my best, right? So OSCAL is the Open Security Controls Assessment Language. I'm sure you knew that already. Essentially, all it is it's a way to organize control language, right? It's in a digital organized way. And so I just actually did a presentation on this. We just released it yesterday. So on the 30th, I gave a talk to a local ISC Squared chapter and talked specifically about that. And so I could send that along your way, right, to kind of give you a little bit more detail. But it's a standard way for reporting on controls, okay, which is just really awesome, right? Because you have what we call like catalogs. Catalogs could be something like NIST 800-53, you know, Rev 4 or Rev 5. Those are two different catalogs. Okay. And then within those catalogs, you have profiles. So a profile might be FedRAMP High or FedRAMP Low, or you might have the DoD IL5 profiles that are, you know, kind of subsets within those catalogs. See, this is not a 6-year already. Once you say catalog, you can't see. You lost the 6-year old, right? But the other thing from an AICPA perspective, you would have, hey, all of the catalog for AICPA trust service criteria, right? And then within there, the profiles might be common criteria or processing integrity or, you know, availability or something like that. And if you have it, you know, in that digital format, in that form, you have a way to kind of import controls in a standard way, you know, and you can also report on their status in a standard way. Same thing for like, you know, remediations and findings and all that stuff, right? So we think it's really good because NIST, it takes a long time, you know, to kind of sink your teeth into OSCAL. But for us, you know, with Paramify, I had built the prototype before. And my whole focus has always been on capability. You know, what do you do for multi-factor authentication? What are you doing for background checks and, you know, technical and non-technical processes? And so once we had OSCAL, sweet. Now we have a way to use our platform and we can export any kind of deliverable we want in a common language. So we can say, hey, make OSCAL for this. And then it's common. And it can be used for FedRAMP or it can be used so we can automate literally any deliverable. And so that's what we're really good at. You know, so for example, can you imagine being able to have a place for your clients just to maintain Section 3, right? You know, and you just have a really easy way to do it and it's tied to evidences. And so you know that it's true, right? Not only the narrative, but also the controls that are supporting that narrative. You know what the status is altogether, right? So
so OSCAL is like so you have your control framework, right? Like we talked about security awareness. So like a control might be employees perform security awareness training annually. And so like you said, like for the SOC 2 report, you end up having to kind of map that manually to the Section 3 and kind of this narrative form, and then also in Section 4 as a in the matrix form, and then also internally wherever you're storing your controls, and then maybe also in policies or procedure document.
Hopefully in procedures, so OSCAL, right?
So could OSCAL, like, is there a way to use OSCAL to map between all those different
area? That's why we love it, right? Because it's a way for us to, you know, have a common reference. Just, you know, OSCAL doesn't offer any automation out of the box. You still have to fill out everything, but you can use tools to do it. And so we love it, right? For that reason, because we focus on, you know, capability, right? So, excuse me, one sec. Yeah. That's kind of what we're trying to do, is like, how do we do things in one place instead of, you know, 50 different places, right? Multiple times. Yeah. It's just a nightmare, especially FedRAMP, because we're talking thousands of pages, you know, for these things, right? So it's the same thing. It works. We've done stuff for ISO 27001 for the ISMS, you know, and we're still doing that. And we, you know, SOC 2 Section 3, but just having a way to organize everything is the goal. So we want to be an Iron Man suit for practitioners like yourself, right? And for other GRC experts, right? Where we're just making it really easy to do what you're really good at as quickly and as fast as possible. And working with complementary tools that are actually, you know, able to get evidence and all that stuff, right? So we're pretty excited about the feedback we're getting so far. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for breaking it down a little bit. I'm closer to understanding it.
Yeah, I'll send you the link after. It's put it in the show notes. I definitely don't want to pat ourselves on the back here. Not my intention, but yeah, it's a good one. I'll put it in there. Okay, man. Two more questions. So Bo, you came from, you know, the finance side, and you quickly migrated into InfoSec, and it was a good fit for you. Do you have any advice for those who are just starting their career in the InfoSec advisory in industry?
There's so many things, right? Like, I don't know if you're starting in consulting or you're starting in security or some mix of the two, I'm sure it looks a good bit different. But I think one of the things that's allowed me to progress quickly through different roles or just like learn and grow really quickly has been to be curious, and kind of like curious in an aggressive way. Like, you know, you ask a question and you get an explanation, and a lot of times that's not good enough, right? But you, like, that person seems like they're done talking about it, so you're like, okay, thank you. But just like, don't be satisfied with that. Like, ask it again or ask it in a different way until you get the answer that you're looking for there. A lot of times you'll figure out like that person just doesn't know, you know, and then you can go find it somewhere else. But if you're just constantly curious about the why until you understand something inside out, then the next time that pops up, a similar issue, right, you'll be able to address it really comprehensively if you understood the principle.
Yeah, that's good advice. All right, man. I don't know. I think I need to stop asking this one, but you know, why not? Just for consistency. Who's the one in the fellowship that you must identify with?
Of the ring?
Yeah, the fellowship. Yeah, which one? Who's your guy or gal?
Yeah. I'm just listening to.
Are you?
The book. Yeah. I just picked it up last week. I'm listening through it.
Oh my gosh. That's legit, man. Okay.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the Lord of the Rings, man. I love Tolkien.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should have listened to more podcasts to be ready for this question, but probably got to be Sam, just someone who's like bumbling along, but is pretty loyal and pretty
determined, and you know, he'll help you out. You'll get there eventually.
Yeah. I love it.
That's what I relate to.
Yeah, man. Sam is always my runner up. I go with the cliche, you know, Strider, Aragorn.
Nice.
Right.
So nice.
I always do that, but you know, Sam, he's definitely like there, right? You know, no one picks Frodo. Nobody.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because of Elijah Wood. I don't know. I thought he did a good job, you know, but
yeah. Anyway. Yeah. You don't want to get your hand bit off by Gollum, I guess. That's
true.
That's a bad way to end things.
Yeah, man. Be bad. All right, man. Well, dude, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I think there's a lot of good information here, and I'm excited to share with our listeners.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, man. Let's do it again. See ya.